Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Cinephile, you're listening to the Big Fred Venice, Fred Film Radio's daily show from the Venice International Film Festival, the very last episode of this daily show. And the very last day, the last duel, yeah. Very good, yeah. And I'm Matt Micucci.
I'm Angela Cerbi.
And it's very emotional, of course. Tonight, we will know who the winners are.
Yeah.
And but we can't reveal them right now. And
because we don't know them, actually.
We don't know them yet. We don't. Sure, we don't. No, we don't. We really don't. We really don't. And there's still plenty of films to talk about. And it's a little bit emotional. So let's start off with just a general question, Angelo. What has your festival been like this year?
Well, it was good. Quality-wise, films were... The medium quality was very high. There wasn't nothing from what I saw that blew my mind totally, besides Dune, but it was not in competition, so it doesn't make sense. But the quality was very high, and the I think also the side sections were very good. Because, I mean, you watch more than me of those films, but then
My goodness, I love it. I traveled to so many different places this year of the world that I just feel like I've been on a round trip, a world trip, and it's been unbelievable. So just for that, it's been worth the price of the ticket, which I didn't pay anything for the ticket. I actually worked my butt off.
It's a good selection. I mean, the work they did, the selection committee for Orizzonti, and then the one from the Critics Week, and then
Giornata
di Autori, they were pretty on the job.
Absolutely.
The job.
All right. Hey, you gave me a little
good, I gave
because
you
because we both have to be somewhere very soon. You got to pack. I have to watch my final screening of a film that we will talk about later. On the Job, The Missing Eight is the first film that we will talk about. I will talk about this one. It's by Eric Matti, who is, and it's from the Philippines, and it's in competition. Some people have said that it could be a favorite, but really, when you watch it, it doesn't seem like it could be the typical festival movie, because it's super, super, super entertaining. That doesn't mean that it's not good, because entertaining cinema can also be amazing and very, very in-depth. This one, for example, focuses on corruption and media censorship, but it's a whole gangster movie that kind of recalls the films of I don't know, from Bruce Lee to Quentin Tarantino to Brian De Palma, Scarface, Oliver Stone screenplays, Sergio Leone is a little bit of the spaghetti western influence. And it's 3 hours and 28 minutes, and if a film that's that long can manages to keep you hooked and just unbelievably entertained, you know, that's an achievement.
Yeah.
Not many films can do that.
Not even shorter films can do that.
Real. I loved it, and it's my Golden Lion winner, and I'm saying it right now. My personal Golden Lion goes to On the Job. Having said that, I haven't seen the Sorrentino film, which sounds awesome, but and then a lot of other films. But this is my, of all the films I watched in the competition, my personal Golden Lion goes to On the Job, The Missing Eight. It is a popcorn classic.
And I was talking with colleagues and our colleagues and friends of mine that they were not very into watching a Filipino film.
No.
At the end of the festival, but then they were completely blown away.
I think they kept it to the end because of that reason. Because they were like,
come on, a Filipino film,
and then
at
they
the
walk
end, and then you, wow.
You completely awake and alert, and it's awesome. It's so good.
Very good. I'm so happy. I haven't seen it, but I will try to. Yeah.
And let me say, it's a sequel, so I'm going to catch up with the first one too.
Which it's even better, because if you can understand and enjoy a sequel without having seen the first chapter, it means that the film in itself is
I don't even think you can do that with The Godfather Part 2, because you kind of have to watch Godfather Part 1, you know?
Exactly.
Anyways, Angelo, it is your turn.
This
one is called Another World, and what can you tell us about it? It's another competition film.
By Stéphane Brisé. It's a movie about a man cracking up under the way of his job. He's a manager for a multinational company, and his job is not going as he wanted to. His changes is getting worse. It's getting more mechanical, and he doesn't like that. His life is cracking up because he's divorcing from his wife. After like 25 or 30 years of marriage, Henny's personal life, his family life, besides this divorce, is cracking up because he and his wife find out that their son has a mental illness.
Right.
So there is not a single aspect of his life that is going well, but the focus of the film is about the work part, because what Stéphane Brisé told us in the interview was, is that he wanted to tell us the story of how the managers, the big managers of big companies, are getting into a huge crisis because the quality of the job is getting senseless and useless as normal, regular, basic workers. So, and this is not the life that he wanted to live. And so the film goes towards a huge choice that this man has to make at the end of the film that will change his life completely. It's a French film, not very classical French. He has a weird editing, very, very rough, very, you know, cuts are really almost wrong. They looked wrong, but they're not, of course. Give you the sense of oppression, of anxiety that this man is going through every single moment of his life. It's a good movie with Vincent Lindon playing the main character, and he's great. And he's great because here is not a tombeur de femme, it's not a French lover, he's a very divided and angry also man, which is, and he plays it very well.
So. Excellent. Sounds really good.
Yes.
We've got a lot to talk about, but I think this one was one of the most awaited films of the festival, so we need to get to it. It's the latest film by Ridley Scott, who also received the Cartier Glory to the Filmmaker Award.
Yeah.
And so that's really exciting. But he presented out of competition The Last Duel.
The Last Duel, which is taken from a book.
Okay.
Right. Oh, tells the story of these two knights of the in 13th century in France. They yes. are faithful to the king, but their relationship is manipulated, if I may say so, by this count played by Ben Affleck, who befriends and with one of the knights and make these two knights that were friends at the very beginning become enemies. Mm-hmm. And the last duel is because the film starts with this duel between these two men, and the film is the recollection from three different point of views of what caused this duel. So there is the Matt Damon character point of view, the Adam Driver point of view, and then the female point of view, which because everything revolves around a rape that the wife of Matt Damon's character suffer from Adam Driver's character. And it's a very majestic film in terms of, I mean, it's 152 minutes. The production value are enormous. Really, Scott knows how to use camera, knows how to build up grand movies, so it's not, you know, it's not surprising
yeah.
under this point of view. And it's really clever the way, because, you know, as we were talking with Matt Damon, which is one of the three screenwriters, because Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, and Nicole Olofsson are the three writers of the film.
Interesting.
Taken from this book. So, and the risk was, if you have three parts telling the same story, that the film could get boring. But they were clever enough and smart enough and professional enough to write the same story in three ways that are not always adding up information that you don't have.
Yeah.
Matt Damon was telling me that they actually use only two sequences that are repeated in all the three parts, but just two sequences. All the rest is another story, is another point of view on the same story.
Mm.
What can I say? I mean, it's a gigantic film. It's yeah.
It's
really cruel, and it's also cruel visually
yeah.
and violent because, you know,
the
13th century were not exactly
yeah. no.
soft.
But it's interesting because, you know, obviously, you know, cinephiles listening to this will see a Ridley Scott film called The Last Duel, and they will immediately think about the film that he made, I think it was possibly the film that really made his career, the first film that was acclaimed of his, The Duelist, I think from 1973, something like that. And so it's interesting that he's kind of revisiting, I guess, this duel thing, this duel
but,
theme.
But with another, and then with a very feminist, feminine point of view, because the most interesting, one of the most interesting thing about the film is that the wife, we are in the 13th century, where a woman that was raped could not tell it, because if she tells it, she's going to be killed, either by his husband or by the law. So, but she wants to say it, so she keeps on this will of speak out, which was amazing for a woman back then, and unfortunately is still not very common for women in the same situation in these days. And Olof Sonner told me that what they wanted to do exactly to give this feminine point of view of the film, which is, I mean, the duel is between two men, but the reason and the motive and the motion of the film is all on her. Mm-hmm. And Jodie Comer, who plays Marguerite, which is Matt Damon's character, wife. So it's it's a hell of a film.
Obviously, it's a major film, and I'm sure that this is one of the ones that will be, you know, theatrically released all over the world, along with other titles that we've seen at the Venice Film Festival, like The Card Counter, like a couple of other films. Sorrentino film is coming out on Netflix soon, so, you know, a lot of these films, some of these films, not a lot of them, actually have distribution, so you guys will be able to watch them very soon.
But I know, actually, that many of the small ones have been bought. Mm.
Good.
Through Venice.
Wow.
Especially, I mean, for the Italian market as well. So, which means that
Italian folks
things are moving again.
All right. So, I mean, there's a lot of other films that we could talk about, but I'm just going to keep it to one more. And this is one that I wanted to talk about because it's by Oleg Sentsov, who, you know, we all remember Sentsov was in prison for five years. Charged with terrorist act, with plotting a terrorist act. He's obviously an activist as well as a filmmaker and an artist from Crimea. And his story, you know, the European film community really gathered to, you know, support this guy. And while he was there, and I got to interview him, and it was great. Unfortunately, the interview is in Italian. So, but what he told me was that he worked on several screenplays while he was in prison. The film that he's presenting here, Rhino, isn't one of them. He wrote the screenplay 10 years ago, and it's about the rise, very simply put, it's about the rise of a criminal in Ukraine in the 90s. But it follows him from a very young age, from a childhood to later on in life and his experiences, even as he's imprisoned. And it's almost like in the end, it's like this really tale of redemption. Interestingly enough, I mean, anyone who's not familiar with Oleg Sentsov may know the works of Balabanov. I hope you pronounce him that way. Or Balabanov. And he made such films as Brother. This film really reminds me of his style, that really gritty, tough-skinned, male testosterone-fueled style of movie. But also it has very artful moments. For example, the part where we see the childhood of the protagonist of the film is shot in something that gives me God bumps as I'm talking to it. It's like, it almost looks like a single shot. And time just completely lapses several years. And as the camera moves, it moves through time. And I don't know if I've ever seen that. I don't know if I've ever seen it, and it is. My mind was blown. I mean, this is real cinematic vision, and I'm totally. I was blown away by it. It's a great film, and it's in the Orizzonti section, and I love it.
And you know that there is has been created a huge shitstorm on the film, on the social on social networks.
Wow.
There were comments on the Biennale social network on the fact that they were promoting a film from a terrorist.
What?
Yeah. I was just talking with the head of the Biennale social network yesterday, and she was telling me that they were managing this crisis, which is obviously manipulated. Ooh. is orchestrated from a political point of view. Of course, it doesn't have nothing to do with the film, with him and with his work. But they, you know, it's always trying to
The guy is not a terrorist.
No, of course, we know. Yeah. But, you know, they're trying to keep on working on this fake news in order to create a fuss.
Crazy. I mean, you know, he protests against the hardships that his people endure. Yeah, definitely not a terrorist, but a great artist. And maybe that's why they didn't really put him in the main competition, because I feel this could have been...
Well, there was another Russian film in the competition. There were more than one.
But Sentsov must have really...
And one Ukrainian, so they needed to maybe to keep a wider range, geographically speaking. Yeah.
But Sentsov must have really angered some people. You know what he did?
Maybe he
didn't wear the right shoes to a formal party or something. Yeah. But anyways, it's really crazy. But as far as I'm concerned, Rhino is one of my favorite films of the festival. Let's just end it with one film that we got to mention, of course. We recently, well, not recently, but it does feel time moves in mysterious ways recently. Ennio Morricone passed away last year. The greatest, for me, the greatest film composer. I mean, he revolutionized
music. Yeah, well, the film is really something, even with its gigantic length, because it's 162 minutes, and it's so filled with information and insights and comments and words directly from Ennio Morricone, because Giuseppe Tornatore made a huge work of research, of archival research. Yeah. And besides talking with all the directors that worked with him, which they gave us another point of view, but the most interesting things are what Ennio says. In this film, and how he revealed the way he was working, he worked in creating songs, which was its influence, and the fact that he started as an arranger for pop music was still using his classical backgrounds, but this passage through pop music was, I think, the thing that. That kept him this long that gave his career such a long length.
Yeah, pop sensibilities.
Yeah, he was never out of date.
Yeah. Although he did do several experimental pieces that are unbelievable. Ennio Morricone was one of the greatest music artists in the history of humanity.
And documentary is really fascinating and. Yeah. Even if it's so
unbelievable.
Long, you don't feel it.
I'm going to see it now.
Yeah,
so I'm going to see it very soon.
You will have a feast.
I am a huge fan of Ennio Morricone, and I am also a fan of Tornatore. And of course, we should say the two were great collaborators. I mean, the score for
and they were friends. Because Giuseppe told us that they were friends since a very long time.
Yeah.
So they had the kind of connection that only friends have, so they can work together. And even when he went to interview him for this film, he didn't have to ask.
Yes,
and we just knew what Giuseppe needed to listen. So this it was.
It's beautiful.
This is why the movie works.
I'm looking forward to it, Angelo. We got to go, but I didn't ask you to prepare for this, so it's going to be very spontaneous, but I would love to ask you, of all the films that you've seen from all of the different categories, because we talked about who might win the Golden Lion, this time I'm going to ask you, what are your top five films?
Okay, so my top five films are America Latina by Innocenzo Brothers.
You completely...
this is not my first one. The top five.
Yeah, but still.
The Card Counter, Spencer, The King of Laughter, and Dune.
Very good, very
my
good.
My five... I mean, I haven't seen as many... films from the side section as usual. Yeah. So maybe there are other gems that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
But from what I saw, these are my five.
Yeah, it's hard to do them in order of preference. But I think that for me, as far as I'm concerned,
mine was not order of preference.
Mine is not in order of preference either. But I will say that On the Job, The Missing Eight is definitely up there. I'm also going to put in Rhino. I don't know how people reacted to Rhino. I don't know what reception it got. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, but we don't care.
I don't care. I got my own taste on it. I really liked El Otro Tom, which I'm not sure people are talking about that much, but to me it was super great. And at times I recalled that François Truffaut, which is a hero of mine. And then I don't know.
I'm Come already on. Out.
Oh my goodness, I can't do it.
Okay.
We
just
gotta
had
go.
Four.
Okay, maybe I'll tell you all about it in on the Big Fred Tuesday, which will resume. Our social media manager might be relieved to know that it will not resume next week, because I realize that there is no way that I can put something together for them. I can't do it. I know. I can't do it. But in the but anyways, it will, you know, we'll go over all the winners too, because we can't do it with a live stream, unfortunately. But keep an eye out, obviously, on our social media, and then check out Big Fred Tuesday, which will resume not next week, the week after that, on Fred.fm. Angelo, it has been a pleasure. Let's give a star rating to this Venice Film Festival. Out of 5 stars, what does it get?
Well, a big 4.5.
4.5, yes. I will give it 5 bags of popcorn, 5 cups of soda, and 5 stars. Because long live the greatest and most beautiful and oldest film festival in the world. I don't care. I have a soft spot for Venice. For the Venice Film Festival.
We all have, actually.
It's not just because they give us all of this stuff. It's because, guys, you know, honestly, it's the best. Okay? All right. Okay. All right. Angelo, it has been great.
Thank you
to everybody.
Thank you to everybody here.
Anybody, but everybody has
to
been
Federica,
great.
To Federica, to Giacomo,
yeah,
Pierre,
this is
Martina,
tricky now, because I
Nicolo,
we don't want to leave anybody out. Yeah.
Lucia, Alberto, we have plenty of...
Everybody. Let's leave it at that. Till the next... Oh, we got Martina, head producer, the boss.
You've just been thanked.
You want to come in front of the camera for a second and say hi to everybody?
She wants to say hi to everybody.
Hi.
Okay.
She's our producer. Good.
Until the next time.
Until the next festival.
I've been Matt McCluskey. I've been Max Mitucci.
You've been Max Mitucci, but you are Matt.
Yeah. I'm Matt McCluskey.
Matt McCluskey.
So if anyone watching from you know where, I'm definitely Matt McCluskey. And
I'm Angelo Cherby.
Are you sure about that?
Very much.
Till the next time, stay healthy, stay safe, stay strong. Most importantly, stay cinephile and stay tuned to Fred Film Radio, the festival
insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.